This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News, and I'm Joe Palca, sitting in for Ira Flatow. Colorful reefs have always been one of the glories of the Caribbean, but that color is disappearing. In a study out today, UK scientists compiled results from 65 studies and found something shocking. 3 decades ago, coral blanketed the reefs of the Caribbean. Now, the UK scientists say, coral cover has dropped by 80%. This destruction has scientists worried about the future of the marine ecosystem. We'll start the hour today talking about the state of our coral reefs, how they got so bad, whether we're to blame, and what we can do to stop it. So give us a call. Our number is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. And if you want more information about what we'll be talking about this hour, go to our website at www.sciencefriday.com, where you'll find links to our topic. Now, let me introduce my guests. Isabelle Côté is a senior lecturer at the Center for Ecology, Evolution, and Conservation in the School of Biological Sciences at the University of East Anglia in Norwich, England. She joins me today by phone from her home there. Welcome to the program, Dr. Côté.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, I guess.
That's right. Well, we have evening for you and afternoon for us.
That's right.
And I'd also like to welcome John Ogden. He's the director of the Florida Institute of Oceanography and a professor of biology at the University of South Florida in St. Petersburg. He joins me today by phone from his office there. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Ogden.
Thank you very much, Joe. It's nice to hear your voice again.
That's
after
right.
All these years.
Well,
and Dr. Côté, it's a pleasure to be on with you.
Indeed. Same here.
Well, I should tell people, our listeners, that that Dr. Ogden, John Ogden, and I have met on a number of occasions over the years, so if I start sounding familiar with him, it's because I've known him for a while. All right. Well, let's start with you, Dr. Côté, since you've got the new study today. Tell me a little bit about what you did and how you did it. What were you looking at? How were you doing your analysis of the decline of coral reefs?
Okay, well, the first thing I need to say is that this is actually a spin-off to the main study we were initially thinking of doing. So initially, we just wanted to look at the effect of hurricanes on Caribbean reefs, and we wanted to study this over a very large scale. And we thought the best approach to do this, because we knew that there were lots of data available that people had already collected, we decided to ask all those researchers who've been monitoring reefs across the Caribbean for many years, we kindly asked them to give us their data, and they did. So the first thing to mention is that we certainly couldn't have done this without the help of all those people. Now, before we could address the issue of hurricanes, we needed to establish the background, what the background pattern of coral cover was. And it's when we actually put all these data together that we realized that we were looking at a massive decline in coral cover that was spreading right across the Caribbean, starting from about 1977, which were the oldest data we have in the data set.
How massive are we talking about here?
Well, basically, 25 years ago, if you were to put a meter square frame, sort of at random, on a reef in the Caribbean, you would have had about half of that frame filled with hard coral. Today, if you were doing that, you'd have only about a tenth of that frame. So in percentage, that means there's been an 80% decline in hard coral cover over the past 25 years.
And you started out by wanting to study hurricanes. Are they a particular threat to coral?
On a pristine reef, on a very healthy reef, they can have quite a drastic, immediate impact by breaking coral. But it's thought that if a reef is in good health, it can bounce back from this relatively quickly, so over the space of 1 or 2 decades. Now, when a reef is in not such a healthy condition, it can take relatively longer, much longer, to recover if the reef recovers at all.
All right. So, Dr. John Ogden, What do you make of this? Does this come as a surprise to you, this extent
well,
of this damage?
Well, actually, not at all, Joe. First of all, let me say I congratulate these authors in doing a job which is seldom done, to gather all these threads together and to provide a picture which we seldom get of regional decline in reefs. And this is an excellent thing. But I was reminded, as Dr. Cote was speaking, that I began my career in 1977 in the Caribbean, and we thought at that time that we were working on reefs that were pristine. In other words, this was the undisturbed baseline. But it's taken me a career to find out that even in those days, our Caribbean reefs were already heavily impacted by the essentially the impact of rapidly, relentlessly growing coastal human populations in the Caribbean, with all the attendant impact. So we've known about this for a long time, and frankly, it isn't a mystery why Caribbean reefs are declining. It is that the solutions that we have to come up with as a society are among the most painful we have to face. So I think this report really drives home the point that we have some work to do. We know what we have to do, I argue. We just have to have the political will to do it.
John, you know what I think we ought to do before we go too much further is explain to people what coral is and how it's different from just, you know, a rock.
Well, coral is essentially a wonderful association between an animal and a plant, and we call it a symbiosis. And corals, as think of them as individual building blocks, can construct over time the largest biogenic, that is, made by organisms, structures in the world, visible from space, the larger than any human construct. And these are the coral reefs. The Great Barrier Reef of Australia is 1,500 kilometers long. This association between the animal and the plant, however, is a delicate one, as you might expect, as any organism's physiology is, and it can be disrupted by stress. And the multiple stressors that human populations bring to coral reefs, we believe, are the causes for the decline that Dr. Cote's team has reported on in Science.
Okay. And, well, why don't we invite our listeners to join this conversation? You can call us at 1-800-989-TALK. That's 1-800-989-TALK or 8255 if you prefer the numbers. And let's go to Denise in Los Angeles. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I had a salt tank. Actually, my husband had a salt tank and saltwater fish and corals, and we just loved it. And over the years, I found out that there were huge plane loads of animals coming in every day to Los Angeles. And the kinds of things that they would do to get the fish and get the coral was so destructive to the environment that we really lost our enthusiasm for it and got out of it. And I was wondering what impact that has on it. I couldn't believe that there was that much damage being done to the reefs just for pet owners, for fish shops.
Dr. Cote, do you want to take a stab at that?
Sure. That is a serious problem, particularly in the Indo-Pacific rather than in the Caribbean. So the fishing of fish with cyanide, for example, or with dynamite fishing, very, very destructive practices that some people use, essentially most of the time to supply the pet trade. They are indeed extremely damaging, and there is a movement that started in Britain, and it's I'm sure the U.S. is part of this now, which is the Marine Aquarium Council, I believe they're called, that is striving to register suppliers of aquarium fish that are either breeding fish in captivity or at least taking fish from the wild using sustainable methods. So pretty soon, hopefully, people will be able to know whether they're buying a fish from a reputable source or not, and hopefully there'll be essentially customer demand's going to make it so that these methods that are very damaging no longer will be used, hopefully.
Denise, thanks for the call. Thanks. Let's go to Bob in Ohio. Bob, I'm sorry, here we go. You're on the air. Welcome to Talk of the Nation Science Friday.
I believe there's many good reasons for having one or more sea level canals along the Isthmus of Panama, and I'm wondering if the circulation that that would accomplish there would be thermal and tidal and saline and more likely Coriolis forces that would continue an east to west current through there, and that would give you clean circulation of your coral reefs and would decrease the temperature of that tropical water and would depress the number of hurricanes you have a year.
Interesting question. Bob, what do you think? John Ogden, what do you think about that?
Well, that's an interesting idea, but one has to remember that the driver for the phenomenon of coral bleaching, which occurs when corals are stressed, the plant cells are expelled from the coral animal and they bleach a white color, that this is essentially driven by the oceanographic phenomenon known as the ENSO, the El Nino current. And the El Nino current essentially creates a lot of hot water on the west side of the Americas. So putting a sea level canal wouldn't necessarily bring in the kinds of seawater that the caller suggests. I actually began my career working for the Smithsonian in Panama, and there are a number of other potentially detrimental effects of sea level canals, and I think fortunately we have really left that idea behind for the moment.
Okay, let's go to Axel in Oregon. Axel, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hello. Thanks for having me. I love your show. I just wanted to make a comment about comparison to a study that was done by Jacques Cousteau, and maybe not so much a study, but a comparison. He shot probably the first underwater color film in the 40s or early 50s in the Mediterranean, and then dove the same site about 25, 30 years later. And there was a really stark contrast. I mean, the reefs were practically dead. There was very little marine life left, and there was very little doubt to the cause of that being the pollution. And
right.
And since the Mediterranean is also like a micro ocean, it's much more contained, and therefore the effects were could perhaps be seen much sooner than in larger oceans.
Interesting. Dr. Cote, does this suggest that things were, you talked about a 50% cover 25 or 30 years ago. It sounds like things might have been even better before and worse by 1970s.
That's quite possible, and certainly Dr. Ogden's suggestion at the beginning seemed to indicate that that was the case. I mean, you do have to realize that a 50% cover of hard coral doesn't mean there's hard coral and the rest of it is dead. I mean, the rest of the cover is made up of soft coral and sponges and algae, and there might be a bit of dead coral as well, but in general, a reef that has 50 to say about 70% cover of hard coral is considered to be quite a healthy reef.
I think the caller has hit on something interesting, though. He's talking about the Mediterranean, and it's important to remember that the Caribbean is a Mediterranean sea in itself. In the effect that it is abounded by continents and an island arc. And the effect of steadily accumulating stress within this Mediterranean Sea may well be involved in the manifestations that we see in one of its most sensitive ecosystems.
John Ogden, I have to ask you to pause there because we need to take a short break, but we'll be right back. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. From NPR News, this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday, and I'm Joe Palka in for Ira Flatow. My guests this hour are John Ogden, director of the Florida Institute of Oceanography, and Isabel Cote, senior lecturer at the Center for Ecology, Evolution, and Conservation in Norwich, England, and we're talking about decline in coral, particularly a recent study that Dr. Cote conducted and is published this week in Science magazine that describes looking at some 65 studies and showing that the coral decline is pretty significant in the last 30 years. You're welcome to join the conversation. Our number is 1-800-989-TALK. And let's go to Will in Oakland. Go ahead with your question, Will.
Hello. And I need to hear the response on the phone because I'm now out of the rental that I just turned in here at the airport. But my question is, if somebody had a lump of coral in their hand, would they be holding a living organism in some classical biological sense? And then my second question is, why should I care about coral? And I'm not saying I don't or I do. I'm sure I probably do, especially in the context of the current conversation. But, you know, what is it that's important to the human race about coral?
Hey, Will, I'm going to repeat those questions because your phone line's breaking up a little, but I think we got the gist of it. The first question is, if you're holding a piece of coral in your hand, are you holding a living organism? And the second question essentially is, who the heck cares about coral? Why should we care? John Ogden, I know you have strong feelings on the second question, so I'll get you to answer the first question as well.
Okay, well, basically, if you're there in San Francisco and you're holding a piece of coral in your hand, you're likely holding the product, the calcium carbonate product of the living organism, but not the organism itself, unless you had a seawater aquarium. But if you look closely at the next time you go to an aquarium, you'll see that that coral rock is covered with a thin layer of tissue containing both animal and plant cells. So that's essentially the way to look at that.
So not strictly speaking alive. And then the second question, I mean, why do we care about coral? I mean,
well,
it's lovely and all that, but what's the point?
Yes, that's a right. This is the vexing question, and we're continually faced with it. Why do we care? This is the global storehouse for biological diversity in the ocean. More different kinds of organisms evolved over millions of years. And basically, I think it's a question, it's a moral question. If you view yourself as being essentially a fellow traveler on the great blue orb, you are essentially morally bound, as I feel myself to be, to essentially try to conserve as much of this as possible. And we are not talking generally of things that in conservation that are going to be extraordinarily painful to human beings, but rather things that we can all participate in as a society. And maybe we can get to that later on, but that's quite a large subject. But I think this really boils down to a moral question.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for that question. I hope you have a safe flight if you're heading for the Oakland, for the Oakland airport. Let's go to Craig in Pennsylvania. Did I get that right?
I think if you have me.
Oh, it's Bill. And sorry, Miami. I'm sorry. The number was obscured on my list here.
Well, thank you for taking my call, Joe.
Okay.
A very interesting subject. Being in Miami, I have many acquaintances who have gone diving, scuba diving, all over the Caribbean, and including several that have been to Cuba. And many of them have told me that the damage in the decline in Cuba's reefs is far less than that they've seen on the other Caribbean reef structures. And I'm just wondering if your two guests have any comment on that and whether or not their study does include Cuba's reefs.
Well, let's start with Dr. Cote on that one. Were you looking at studies from Cuba in your analysis?
There was no data from Cuba.
So that's actually one of the, I mean, it's possible then that for some reason which we don't understand, Cuba could be better off.
Well, I have to interject here. I think while these studies were probably not available to Dr. Cote because they are not published, there is information that both, in a sense, supports the caller's contention in that the offshore reefs of the south coast of Cuba, way offshore, are essentially perhaps in a less disturbed condition than some others in the Caribbean, but generally speaking, Cuba's reefs have not escaped the general influences that are referred to in Dr. Cote's paper.
Okay. Bill, thanks for that call. I'd like to ask Dr. Cote, what do you see as the primary reason for the decline in the coral? What do you think it is?
Well, I think John explained them fairly clearly at the beginning. I mean, we're looking at mainly at human-made impacts. We're looking at pollution in all of its forms, industrial pollution, domestic pollution, agricultural pollution. We're looking at sedimentation that is caused largely by deforestation of hillsides. And we're looking at overfishing.
Overfishing. And sorry, go ahead.
I'd have to add global climate change into that. You actually, the authors of the paper somewhat de-emphasize this, but I certainly don't.
Yeah, I think what we, the reason why we de-emphasized it is that for the Caribbean at the moment, certainly over the past 25 years, we cannot pick up a clear signal from climate change. If I were asked about whether this statement applies to coral reefs in general, I would say no, because it's very, very clear that the reefs in the Indo-Pacific, for example, have suffered greatly from impacts of climate change in the form of coral bleaching.
I have one other question on that score, and that is, if you look at the rate of decline, are we heading to a time, either of you, where we go to zero and there is no hard coral cover on the reefs that remain in the Caribbean?
Well, I certainly hope not, since I firmly believe that we know what we need to do. And an example of this, I think, is the World Bank and World Wildlife Fund's Mesoamerican Reef Project, which is basically a declaration signed by the presidents of Mexico, Belize, Honduras, and Nicaragua to jointly manage the Mesoamerican coral reef, which is one of the larger structures in the area. And many of Dr. Cote's sites are located along here. It's a very interesting and very biologically diverse area. And I believe that through careful planning of land use and ocean use along this very long sector of the Central American coast, we can seriously reduce those stresses that are regional and local that we can deal with, and leave those reefs, and this is a little bit of an article of faith now, better able to cope with the single stress that we are not willing to cope with, and that's global climate change, injection of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere.
Well, clearly this is a topic we could discuss forever, and certainly for anyone who's seen the coral reefs up close, it would be a shame to lose them in any way. But I'm afraid that's all the time we have this hour, so let me finish by thanking my guests. John Ogden is director of the Florida Institute of Oceanography and professor of biology at the University of South Florida in St. Petersburg. Nice to talk to you again, John.
Same, Joe, and thank you, Dr. Cote.
And Dr. Cote is Isabel Cote is senior lecturer at the Center for Ecology, Evolution, and Conservation in the School of Biological Sciences at the University of East Anglia in Norwich, England. Thank you very much.
Thank you for inviting me.
And that's the end of this segment today.